Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a very special Monday episode, Gym Class All-Stars. Your Gym Class All-Stars have been very busy, very stressed out. A lot has been going on between myself and Robbie, but we are very happy to be back, very happy to be talking sports. And of course, I'm very happy to see your bright and smiling face, Robbie.
Yeah, you as well. It's always nice to get that nice little burst of fun and camaraderie in right before we get into the good stuff.
Of course, since we've been having rough times, I am drinking a Miller Lite on a Monday. Don't worry, we're all good. Just something to kind of soothe the soul. But as always, our podcast is brought to you by Viget, the free-to-play sports betting app. Bet fake money, win real prizes. What's not to love? Use promo code ALLSTARS when you sign up. Definitely help us out. But yeah, so the world of sports is definitely gearing up for a lot of big moments. Baseball's in full swing. The playoffs for the NBA are coming up. The NBA draft is really upon us. So we might as well start with some NFL news. Top stories today. A lot of retirements. My childhood has quite frankly been shattered because somehow, some way, Tom Brady is still in this league. And somehow, some way, Alex Smith and Julian Edelman have retired. Two, I would say, pillars of the 2010s, in my opinion. Alex Smith, even longer than that. But first and foremost, Alex Smith, namesake of me. What a great career. And I mean that in the sense of the adversity he's had to overcome, not just his injury, but also having to be drafted by the abysmal 49ers to take them to a relatively good team, get benched for Colin Kaepernick, get traded to the Chiefs, do the same thing with Mahomes, finally end up in Washington, where unfortunately had a really gruesome leg injury, and finally end up retiring after playing a bit more. What a great career. I don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy necessarily, but just applause is all around. Well-respected name in sports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if you ask any coach that he's played for, that they have just the highest of praise for what Alex Smith brought to the team. You know, he didn't get to be the quarterback that brought San Francisco to the Super Bowl, but he did put them in the position where Kaepernick could step in and really fill his shoes even better. Goes to Kansas City, finds at least a good degree of success there. Doesn't make any Super Bowls or anything, but he puts them back on the map and an opportunity to get Patrick Mahomes and really turn their team around. Comes to Washington, yeah, has that awful injury, and then wins the comeback player of the year. Not any small feat, you know, an awful year for that division, of course, but they still made the playoffs. He was by no means the issue in their playoff loss to the Buccaneers. Hats off to the adversity Alex Smith has fought through. And then the other guy, Julian Edelman, just a long-term receiver. You know, we knew him obviously when he played in New England with Tom Brady. One more year, I guess, without Tom Brady, didn't see much of a point. Always respect him. Love when he calls out, you know, the anti-Semitic NFL players and is like, yo, let's talk about this. So hopefully them both find joy in retirement. It'll be sad to see the NFL go on without both their presences, of course, but everybody's got to move on eventually.
Yeah, I alluded to Alex Smith because he was a very good quarterback, went to the playoffs a bunch, like very consistent, but really didn't have much playoff success. There's been a lot of debate about Edelman going to the Hall of Fame, and I'd like your take because the NFL Hall of Fame is, how do we say, not selective in who they put in. Guys will always find a way to get in. Right. Now, I'm not saying Julian Edelman will not be a first ballot Hall of Famer. No. If that's a hot take to anyone, please stop listening. But what I want to get at is this idea of maybe 15 years from now, could we see Julian Edelman as a Hall of Famer? And not because of his regular season stats, they're okay, but a lot of his playoff success, the Super Bowl MVP, and a lot of continued success with the greatest quarterback of all time being Tom Brady. What do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say the Super Bowl MVP might be what does it for me. Because when you look at Julian Edelman, it doesn't immediately look like a Hall of Fame type receiver. Pretty good regular season stats, like you said, but the playoffs is really where he shined. And of course, it's impossible to determine how much of that was Tom Brady versus him, but they won multiple Super Bowls together. He won himself a Super Bowl MVP. He has one of the best catches in Super Bowl history. He did a very large part for those Patriots teams that won Super Bowls and made Super Bowls. So you cannot deny that. And especially in the NFL, where it's a little more rare for a team to make the playoffs, I guess, just because less teams do make it. The fact that he was there for most of his career, the fact that he is a constant player on that team and on Super Bowl runs, he was always there. And then, you know, last year he battled injuries, but still had some success even without Tom Brady. Definitely not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I feel like Edelman definitely at least has the edge over someone like Alex Smith just because of the playoff success that he really, you know, he dominated as the best receiver that Tom Brady had for most of the back half of his career.
Yeah, people are very polarized by this. I think I would say it's a 60-40 split, with 60% being that he's not in the Hall of Fame, at least from what I've seen. I think eventually he will get in. You know, that can bring up questions about how selective the Hall of Fame is, and you can debate that for however long you want. But to me, I think his contributions to the Patriots and to the NFL, the lore and all that, were definitely adequate enough. And that Super Bowl MVP, along with the continued success, like, there was a 10-year period where he was a pretty important part of that Patriots dynasty. I think you'd have to put him in eventually, but, like, it's going to take a little while. Obviously not a first ballot Hall of Famer. And it is hard when you go up against people like Jerry Rice, Calvin Johnson, probably Julio Jones. He's going to look a little bit weird in that category.
I'm curious now. So who, and obviously one of them still maybe has the rest of his career to play, but Julian Edelman or Antonio Brown, who has more chance of Hall of Fame, but also who would you consider the better receiver? Because I think Edelman at this point has the better chance to make the Hall of Fame, but I don't question that Antonio Brown was a better receiver than Julian Edelman.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because Edelman by far is the better legacy in career. Antonio Brown is the first half of his career up until he got traded to the Raiders, unstoppable. And he's a bit undersized too. He's shorter than I am. The thing is, if he had flipped it, like if he was a diva at the start of his career and then did all this good stuff, people would remember it. But unfortunately, he started so strong, so hot as a 6th-round pick, did so much to the Steelers, and then transitioned into basically being an afterthought in a Bucs Super Bowl. He scored a touchdown, but really didn't do much the entire season. So I would have to give it to Edelman. But I think Antonio Brown is the more freakishly athletic receiver, and I don't think anyone would debate that, especially when not psychotic.
I obviously got to enjoy the time in Pittsburgh a lot. But, yeah, no, I mean, his one game with the Patriots, and then his curtain call at the end of the Buccaneers season. Good for him. But, yeah, no, I agree with all your sentiments there. So, you know, unfortunate to see these guys go, but we have other news in terms of people not leaving the league, but leaving their team, signing somewhere else. Probably the biggest news out of all of them, at least in my opinion, is the Cleveland Browns are very much making moves to ensure themselves the top spot in the AFC North, which is genuinely never a sentence I thought I'd ever say. But they have cut Sheldon Richardson to make room for Jadeveon Clowney, who they intend to put opposite Myles Garrett. As a Steelers fan, I become terrified. That sounds genuinely terrifying to go up against. What do you make of this move by Cleveland and what they're trying to do?
I'd say a low risk, high reward scenario. The problem is, and maybe this is my original pessimism with Clowney when he got drafted number one overall. Like, to me, that big hit in the Michigan, South Carolina, I think it was the Outback Bowl, really just elevated his draft stock to ultimately be number one, like a freakishly great hit, freakish athlete to Texans. After he went to the Seahawks, he had some success there. I mean, he did injure Carson Wentz, but we're going to ignore that. He signs with the Titans, really does not do much. In fact, their defense got worse, which was surprising. Maybe not necessarily because of him, but just in general. So I don't know how good he actually is. Maybe it's been injuries. Maybe it's just been like his inability to play anymore, but I don't know how scary he is currently. Like, he has all the tangibles, like between height, weight, speed, and just a track record of being a freakish athlete. But I don't know. Like, Myles Garrett to me is significantly more scary. Like, Jadeveon Clowney a few years ago, yeah, that's terrifying. But like now, I don't know. I need to kind of see him in action, quite frankly.
I get that. again, odd statement I'm about to make, but the Browns definitely have a better defensive scheme than the Titans. I don't think that's really a question, because you're right, the Titans defense was atrocious last year, and Cleveland, where it wasn't a great defense, you could definitely tell they were putting the pieces together. I think the idea has to be that Myles Garrett can kind of draw out some energy that we haven't seen in Clowney in the last few seasons. Just being aggressive, and maybe the idea that they're going to have to double one side opens things up for Clowney a little bit on the other side. We'll see how it works, but you know, it's one of those moves where you're really just going to have to see how it works, because Cleveland's a good football team at this point. So to take that next step is going to take more than just signing a name.
But that's the thing. They're doing the right moves. Like, they brought in Jadeveon Clowney, who has probably a little bit more name recognition than he was worth in terms – he got $12 million, right?
Something like that, yeah.
It was either 12 or 9. But regardless, it's a good signing. I just don't know – like, there has to be a reason why Jadeveon Clowney has been unsigned. I don't think it's a whole money thing. I don't think teams are just highly interested in what they're going to get. So it's, in my opinion, a pretty low-risk move – a lot of reward. And right now the Browns are doing the right things. Like you said, like, they are putting themselves in positions to win the AFC North next year. And I'm excited to see it, because they have a great offense, very young offense too. The defense, not that it was lack. Well, okay. Their defense needed improvements. They had some great players like Myles Garrett, obviously, but these improvements are definitely going to help. And especially another year under their belt in terms of experience. Like, they will be a force to be reckoned with in the AFC North. They're not going to be the Cleveland Browns of yesteryear. They are going to be like the Pittsburgh Steelers of like a few years ago. Like, they're going to be terrifying.
Oh God, this just sucks. Like I'd be more upset if it was the Ravens, just because I hate the Ravens. Just like, I have spent my entire life getting to shit on the Browns because the Browns have never been good. And now just all of a sudden, like we're not even the second best team in that division. So we don't even, like, they blew us out in that playoff game. So, like, I got nothing, man.
My other problem, though, with the Ravens, their wide receiver one is
Sammy Watkins.
Yo, that's a slight on Marquise Brown, even. But I was gonna, either or, like, none of those are good wide receiver one options. So I don't know. To me, I really think the Browns are going to win the division next year. I think the Ravens will make the playoffs. The Steelers are kind of in that, like, purgatory. Unfortunately, they're keeping Ben around. Like, they have a good team.
It's all about how their offense works. They're going to be teetering that 7 seed if they're still a 7 seed.
Yeah. And then you got the Bengals, who I think aren't going to make much noise next year, but, like, give them a few years of development. And if you give Joe Burrow a line, like, that is also a pretty scary team when you think about the development potential.
Offensively speaking, for sure. Bengals, again, it's always been, can they form a defense?
Yep. And the answer will probably be no. But I digress. What is next? Are we going to talk about the draft?
Well, hold on. A few more signings to get to before we get into our talk about the draft. Right. We're still going to keep this somewhat Steelers related. James Conner, the former Steelers running back and Pittsburgh running back, has signed a deal with the Arizona Cardinals, 1-year deal. We saw Kenyon Drake leave, so he seems set to be the feature back, pretty much alongside Kyler Murray, we assume. But do you think this is a signing that's going to help the Cardinals more, or just James Conner maybe getting a bigger, longer-term contract in the future?
I think this is a great signing for the Cardinals, because the Cardinals' offense is predicated on speed. James Conner is more of a power back. Like, Kyler Murray is fast. No one's going to deny that, but when you need those third and one situations and you need to power through, Kenyon Drake wasn't the guy to get it. He would also be kind of a speed person. So to me, James Conner is better for that. I'm going to say that the line for the Cardinals is a slight improvement to the Steelers, that maybe dissing the Steelers a bit. The only reason I'm going to say that is because of the Steelers' injuries.
Sure. That's fair.
If the Steelers are healthy, and the track record has shown that they can make very okay running backs into absolute stars, Le'Veon Bell, correct, James Conner. And is Benny Snell elite? Because he kind of was Snitty made elite.
Bell? What about Bell. Willie Parker? Come on, I'll go names all day.
One quick segue. Willie Parker, the fact he owns the longest run in Super Bowl history, and tops Marcus Allen's like god tier run is like the biggest shame in history.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Marcus Allen is one of the best runs of all time. It's 74 yards, and Willie Parker has this like straight up the middle run for 75.
I think is the first football player's name I ever learned. He's definitely the first football jersey I ever bought or was given. He's very special to me, so don't you dare be dissing my boy Willie.
Hey, number 39, right?
Yes, sir.
I remember.
What a guy. All right, kind of a – oh, by the way, for James Conner, it'll be the first time he's playing for a team not located in Pennsylvania in his entire life. He grew up in Pennsylvania, went to Pittsburgh for college, and then was drafted by the Steelers, now playing a little further away. All right, last signing we're going to talk about here, Aldon Smith signing with the Seahawks. But that might not even be the most important part of this that you were explaining to me.
Yeah, Robbie told me pre-show, he's like, well, okay, here's a signing. Aldon Smith signed with the Seahawks. And I went, oh, okay. Well, Aldon Smith is wanted for assault currently. So that was a good signing, I guess.
Very, very sound decision by Seattle.
Regardless of the outcome of whether he is guilty or innocent of assault, I'm going to assume the Seahawks release him. So in the end, I guess nothing happens. Yeah, that's either poor timing or poor due diligence. I don't know.
Yeah, no, just
it's just so bad.
Yeah, no, not
like a
great,
day
not
later.
Great. Aldon Smith's been in trouble all his career too. So
I know
this dude might just need to be done. All right. So now we're gonna talk a little bit about the draft here. We're not gonna go too in depth into it. We will post on social media maybe our top 10 to 15 picks, projected picks. But for now, we're going to stick to the quarterback position because that seems to be the most important and most talked about for this year's draft. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence is expected to go number one to Jacksonville. He's already making donations to charities out there. He understands that that's where he's headed. But there are some other names that teams are going to be looking into. We've talked about how Mac Jones could potentially be going to San Francisco. We've talked about maybe Justin Fields going even like as high as two. So a lot here, but there's these four names, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones, that are going to be first round draft picks. They're going to all come after Trevor Lawrence, and they're going to be in positions to help either team as the starter or the, you know, direct backup to whoever they have. So I'm curious, between those four, Wilson, Lance, Fields, Jones, what order you think they're going to go in? And if you have one, like an ideal system they could fit into.
All right, let me put on my thinking cap here, Robbie.
He literally put on his thinking
cap. I literally put on a hat. Okay. Obviously, number one, Trevor Lawrence. My Justin Fields conspiracy theory was wrong.
Bad.
If you haven't seen that episode, that was a very well-done conspiracy theory that proved to be very inaccurate. But it was very good, very well-crafted. Number two to the Jets, I think, is Zach Wilson. I think he has shown up at his pro days. I think he's done a great job both in college and also like to show that he is kind of another prototypical NFL quarterback. I think he's going to go number two. Third is where it gets interesting because I do think a QB will be drafted. It's probably going to be between Justin Fields or Mac Jones. I think it's going to be Mac Jones. I think that's going to be a mistake. But I think the 49ers will take Mac Jones at the third pick.
I respect you sticking by that one. You said that for a few episodes now. I respect it. And honestly, like, as far as hot takes go, that's really not the worst one because they have clearly shown interest in Mac Jones.
Yeah. They've said, like, they've been to Justin Fields' second pro day. There seems to be more interest in him. But everything I've read and looked at, it still seems like Mac Jones is going to be three, at least as of today. So I'm going to stick with that. Okay. The four is the Falcons pick. And this is interesting because I do think the Falcons are going to trade out of it. If the Falcons don't, I could see them picking like call it a lineman or maybe probably someone on defense, quite frankly. They just need help everywhere.
Yeah.
But I could see a world where the Patriots trade up. If they don't, I still see the Patriots potentially taking a quarterback. I think they'd be quite frankly foolish if they didn't. And I think they'd take Trey Lance.
Okay.
I think something about him, a little bit of mobility, but also kind of that pocket passing presence, a little bit more under the radar, kind of fits Belichick's MO. I don't know. Belichick seems to be a pretty decent judge of talents, except for the wide receiver position. N'Keal Harry is a great example of that. But that's, I think Trey Lance, wherever the Patriots fall, I think he's going to be picked by them. Okay. The oddball in that is Justin Fields. And I truthfully do not know where Justin Fields is going to go. Because he could go as high as 2, or he could go as low as like 32. He obviously probably, the Bucks don't have their pick, but like he could fall somewhere anywhere in between there. And I think, honestly, a decent landing spot could be the Steelers if he falls that low. I would 100% take him or Najee Harris if you have the chance.
Dwayne Haskins, don't worry.
Oh, yes, it's the Dwayne Haskins era in Pittsburgh. I forgot. Who needs a quarterback? Let's think about this. Give me some teams besides the top 10, because they obviously all need QBs.
Right. Oakland could use a QB.
Oh, Las Vegas. You dare slander Derek Carr like that, you fool. I could see him go. I could see a Raiders picking a QB, actually.
Yeah, that's not a bad team. The Broncos could definitely go for a quarterback.
Okay, I agree, but I honestly think they're gonna stick it out with Drew Lock for another year, which is going to be problematic.
I think so, but at least like maybe trade down or something and get somebody who you're comfortable being his backup. I don't know. Just Drew Lock has never stood out to me in any way. So I'm weary about him as the quarterback.
No, I agree.
And then I think it's some NFC teams, maybe. I don't know how you're going to take this, but the Vikings could genuinely be looking to replace Kirk Cousins at a certain point. I don't think Kirk Cousins is very good at football.
Kirk Cousins is consistently 8-8, and that's his problem, especially in a 17 game season where he can't go 8-8. That's a good thought though. I think the Bears could potentially be a suitor. True. If they decide to get off their high horse, not think Andy Dalton's their franchise QB. Another one actually that could be surprising is the Panthers. That's not a slight on Sam Darnold. They could stick with that. But, you know, Justin Fields, that's intriguing, especially with CMC as well.
True. I will slight Sam Darnold, though, and they should draft any quarterback in this draft to start him over Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold's awful.
And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt only because he played for the Jets, and the Jets did not give him any proper weapons. But those are a few teams I think they could go. So in order, Trevor Lawrence, I think Zach Wilson's going 2. I think Mac Jones will go 3. And the caveat to that is the third pick could also be Justin Fields. I think the Patriots are going to get Trey Lance is kind of my hot take opinion. I'm going to say Trey Lance than Justin Fields. But honestly, if Trey Lance is the last QB drafted, that wouldn't surprise me either. It's going to depend on where the Patriots want to go. And Trey Lance could 100% fall to the end of the first round.
I definitely agree with most of what you said here. So obviously Lawrence going 1, I think Wilson is going 2 to the Jets. I definitely see the world where Mac Jones goes 3. I think I'm a little less certain of it than you are, but I definitely see it. And I definitely think he's going to end up going in the top 10, just mostly based off name recognition and school recognition. The parts where I differ, I think Justin Fields is the quarterback the Patriots are going to sought after. That's the guy they want for just the mobility, and for whatever reason the Ohio State products, where they usually don't work out at quarterback, maybe they see Fields the change of pace for that. But I think Trey Lance has kind of very subtly turned himself into the outlier among these quarterbacks. I think Justin Fields likely will be the one drafted last of this group, but I think Trey Lance has actually the one with the biggest wavering idea of where he could be drafted. I think he could go anywhere from 3 or 4 all the way to 32. I think if he fell to like where the Pittsburgh Steelers are, it'd be impossible not to say draft him, or the Raiders or whoever else. I like Trey Lance a lot from what the bits I've gotten to see of his pro days on social media and such, and what I got to see of him in college. He makes pretty intelligent decisions with the football, and he is pretty mobile. It's just about scheme fit with him. And I don't entirely know where he fits the best. I think the Patriots could definitely work. I think the Raiders might be the next best bet just because they have that really nicely built offensive line. But I don't know. Lance is the one where I really won't be surprised if he falls past like 15 or 20.
Zach Wilson to me is like going to be the Joe Burrow of last year's draft. I don't mean that in terms of skill, but this idea where he's going to be surrounded by a really crummy team and will do a lot of good, but his team needs to improve before he gets to that point of being like, wow, the Jets are like a scary threat. Mm-hmm. So that's our sort of predictions. We'll kind of finalize them by Wednesday because the draft will be Thursday. Let us know what you think, though, because the quarterbacks are going to probably be the most interesting part of this draft, along with the wide receivers, which we'll definitely touch upon either a mock draft or next week's episode. Devontae Smith, you got Jalen Waddle, you got Ja'Marr Chase. There's a few others in there, Kyle Pitts as well, tight end. There's going to be a lot, and I think this year's draft is going to be very exciting, and there's going to be a lot of interesting picks, I think. There's going to be some moves done, which are going to really impact the league for years to come. I would appropriate this draft to like the 2017 draft with, was it 2017 or 16 with, no, 17. It was with Watson, Mahomes, Trubisky, all those. I think it's going to be a lot like that in terms of QB selection and franchise movement.
That's bold, but I like it. And obviously all eyes going to be on with the Falcons and what they do with that number four pick, because that really could be huge for a team like the Patriots or whoever else maybe makes that move. That's what we got for the NFL today. Gonna move on to some basketball here now in the NBA. A lot to get to, actually. So we'll start with, I guess, some of the less enjoyable stuff. We'll start with Jamal Murray, Denver Nuggets star point guard, has torn his ACL. He will be out for the rest of the year. Pending the COVID safety protocols, they're going to be signing Austin Rivers to more or less be his replacement. You talked about a little bit, you know, off the cuff at the beginning, how this is going to be 4-5 between the LA Lakers and the Nuggets is really just kind of over if that's the case, because Denver is going to struggle without their primary ball handlers. So what does Denver have to do in order to not just get steamrolled by LeBron in the first round, if that's, you know, who they end up playing?
Short answer, nothing. It's kind of over, unfortunately. I hate to be that guy, but I don't think they can do a whole lot. I just, to me, they seem kind of stuck in this. Jokic can do a whole lot for this team, and to me, will still be the MVP, if not like he's gonna be very close to being the MVP if he ends up not. But they need Jamal Murray in tandem with him. That's the problem. And to me, without him, that team isn't really that good.
Yeah, I agree. They have some lackluster guard play outside of Murray, and even Murray's had his inconsistencies this year. So tough break for Denver. We'll see if they even last in that 4-5, or if this is maybe that igniting force that maybe someone like Dallas or Portland needed to start pushing ahead and getting to that 4-5. Obviously, the Lakers are going to get healthy sooner than later at this point. So tough, tough break for the Nuggets there. Moving on, in a surprise retirement, LaMarcus Aldridge has decided to call it a career in the middle of the season. Just after signing with Brooklyn, he played his last game with an irregular heartbeat. He is now putting his health ahead of his playing career. Very unfortunate and sudden to see happen, but A, we're glad he's okay, of course, and B, just, you know, take a moment to sit back and appreciate the great career that LaMarcus Aldridge did in fact have all those years in Portland, San Antonio, and the very little bit of time he had in Brooklyn. But just, you know, an absolutely excellent power forward and center, probably not going to be a Hall of Famer, but definitely,
I think he's going to be
really,
yeah, because this is like the NFL Hall of Fame. It's not incredibly selective. I think Aldridge has had a very consistent career. Even when he went to the Spurs, was still very consistent in the numbers he put up. While he doesn't have any rings, which is kind of what he's aiming for in Brooklyn, I still think it's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. We know that. But this idea that he very consistent longevity, did a lot for both Portland and San Antonio, I think eventually get put in, quite frankly. And that's a little bit optimistic. I get that. But also the selection committee for basketball, there's not a whole lot he has so many all-star appearances. He just doesn't have that ring, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. He was an absolute force in Portland. And then, again, yeah, like you said, he put up great, really good numbers in San Antonio. He got them in the playoffs a couple times. I see him, and I see a lot of similarities in terms of relevancy to a guy like Deron Williams. Deron Williams was a dominant point guard in his prime of his career, but he was an all-star, but he never really made any finals runs. He never was able to be the best, most impactful player on a winning, truly good winning team. And I see a lot of that with Aldridge. He was really, really good, but Portland didn't have any real success in the playoffs until Dame Lillard came around or when Brandon Roy was healthy. And then in San Antonio, where they made the playoffs, they didn't really have a large amount of success with him there. I don't even think he got to play with Kawhi Leonard. I think that was the year Leonard decided to sit because of injury or whatever he said. And that's the thing, is I don't think someone like Deron Williams is a Hall of Famer, so I don't think someone like LaMarcus Aldridge is a Hall of Famer, just because he impacted the teams he was on, but he didn't impact the winning quite enough for me to think this dude was an all-time type player.
Hey, fair enough. So then a few other things we got to get to, going back to the Nets. Kevin Durant, once again hurt. Not much of a shocker. But luckily for you, that gave the Heat just enough of an opportunity to steal a game from the Nets. Bam Adebayo with a game-winning shot. You must have been pretty much ecstatic about that.
You know, I had a buddy coming over right as the game was ending, and he told me he could hear me screaming from the street, which I thought was appropriate. It was awesome. No Jimmy Butler in that one. No James Harden for the Nets, and obviously they ended up with no Durant either. Really good competitive game all the way through for anybody who watched it. And then basically what happened at the end, Bam just kind of like waved off everybody and just hit a nice little floater jumper over Jeff Green, kind of saw it all the way. It was well done. We'll start with Durant here. Again, injured again. It's almost like DeSean Jackson at this point, where he finally gets back to being on the field and then immediately gets hurt that first game back. It's tough because this Brooklyn team cannot play defense. They're incapable of it. They had multiple chances in that game to put Miami away, and again, without Jimmy Butler, and they couldn't do it. Bam Adebayo was excellent on Kyrie Irving, held him to 0 for 8 from the field. Without Durant's leadership, Durant's not, like I always say, not the best defender, but he is the best leader that team has on both ends of the court. That's not a question. And without him, it's just they're missing such a large presence. And at this point, his career in Brooklyn is more over before it even began, because he's not even on the court. He didn't play all of last year. He's played only a handful of games this year. If I'm Brooklyn, I am absolutely terrified that I accidentally win my first round game of the playoffs because, they're going to play some team that you should be able to beat so long as it's not Boston or Miami. And then you're going to run into an actually good playoff team, whether it be the Bucks, the Sixers, the Heat, whoever, and they're going to get crapped on because Durant and Harden aren't in the lineup.
But Kyrie.
Exactly. Harden isn't necessarily injury prone, but he's just been battling injuries this year. But Kyrie and Durant are injury prone all-stars. And that was always the biggest worry when they came to Brooklyn, even before Harden.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And Kyrie Irving is a double-edged sword where he's great normally, but he's also kind of a toxic locker room presence. And on top of that, yeah, he's very injury prone. So it'll be interesting. I hope they do get healthy, because despite the fact they are a super team, like, I do really want to see what they can do. And my thought process is they will implode to a second round team, but it's going to be kind of lame if they're, if they're injured, like, they're going to have to run it back. And then, like, we have more problems next year. And they have to deal with another super team. We're just like, come on, we can do this. For my sanity, wrong. Kill it now. Kill a super team now.
LaMarcus Aldridge is way ahead of you on that one. For the other end of it, Miami, who, as we've talked about, have really been up and down all year, been up to the four, been down to out of the playoffs. They're currently at 7. They are really hoping that shot from Bam Adebayo is going to spark a good run. Unfortunately, the game after, they're playing without both Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler now against Houston, so they should still be able to prevail, but it has been tough sledding for Miami. They have really struggled against teams above 500, especially Western Conference teams. especially on the road. I think if they can get healthy, Jimmy specifically, because Jimmy's been in and out of the lineup a lot this year. He's the biggest piece. Trevor Reese has gotten hot and seems to be getting a little more comfortable, which is nice. It's just Tyler Hero's been cold. It's about getting comfortable, getting back to that point where we were at last year, where we just kind of got into the bubble, handled those few regular season games left, and then just steamrolled the first two rounds. We lost one game in the first two rounds, and I know it's a different team and I know it's a different feel, but I've always felt like that this team this year could still get to that point, but for whatever reason we just haven't found it, and it's getting to the point where we're running out of time.
Yeah, the Heat are always going to be hot and cold until the playoffs. Speaking of that, though, I do want to get your 10 second reaction about Tyler Hero. There's been reports that Miami thinks Miami's organization thinks that Tyler Hero has the belief he's too much of a star. Do you agree or disagree with the sentiment from like the heads of the Heat organization?
At the very least, I agree with the concern for it, because that dude had got way too famous way too fast.
But he has a rap song about him. Jack Harlow wants to know if Tyler Hero will fix my jumper.
So does Mo Bump. Mo Bamba has a song that literally everybody singing the song doesn't even know who they're singing about. I have a rule that if Mo Bamba comes on at my party and you don't know who Mo Bamba is, you're not allowed to sing.
Regardless,
I digress.
You know, this actually has made me realize that having a song named after you as an NBA player is probably just asking for you to be either overrated or just underperforming.
It's not great, because like I just said, Tyler Hero's cold. In the last month, Tyler Hero's averaging like 7 points per game on like 38% from the field. It's pitiful.
All right.
Ever since being taken out of the starting lineup, you know, him being taken out of the starting lineup helped the Heat in terms of being able to guard defenses a little better, guard offenses a little better, but it really hurt Hero, and he's been struggling since. You are way too excited to show me this video.
No. Here's the question. Which is a better song? Is it Tyler Hero or is it Mo Bamba? Which is a better song? And I mean, in terms of like, not just in terms of musical production, because I think Tyler Hero is a better, you know, song, but in terms of like actually like cultural impact on the world, or even like take everything into like consideration, what would you rather hear?
It's moments and questions like these that make me really, really happy that I'm going into the world of journalism. I'm going to very begrudgingly say Mo Bamba, because if I'm at like a bar and I'm chilling, say Roni safe, of course, when I'm at a bar chilling, I am much more likely to start like dancing and vibing to Mo Bamba than I am the Tyler Hero.
You know, Mo Bamba will get me hyped. I will never disagree with that. If I have a few beers in me, I hear Mo Bamba at a bar, of course, Roni safe, like Robbie was alluding to. Like, you're going to go nuts, especially since we've been without it for literally over a year. Like, I have not been to a bar in over a year, and I've not heard Mo Bamba at, like, 12:30 at night.
Right?
But, like, Tyler Hero, that song, just, I don't know. I kind of like Jack Harlow in the sense, like, I think he's actually he's not just a mumble rapper. He's more than that. Mm-hmm. He's more than that to me, Robbie. But, I don't know. To me, Tyler Hero's cultural impact is much less than Mo Bamba, solely because Mo Bamba, that song went massive back in, it was 2018. Yeah, it's been that long.
Damn, it really has been that long. God, I used to listen to that like driving to football game or fight games freshman year of college to get hyped or whatever, and God, we lost, I think, every game.
But we were hyped.
We were ready to go, man. No, actually, no. I think we won one, if I'm not mistaken. And we only lost our playoff game by, like, 3 points. Like, we played really close.
Did you miss the field goal?
Well, actually, this is – okay, we're going to tell a quick story here. So, the second year, we were actually decent. We had a couple of wins. We were in our playoff game, and there's no field goals. It was just, like, you had to go for one, two or three extra points, and however many you wanted would vary how close you were to the goal line. And everybody was going for two pretty much. It was the easiest. It was the most reasonable one. And so this was painful for me. So I scored all of our team's touchdowns that game.
Of course.
I had a rushing touchdown, I had a receiving touchdown, and a pick six. The way we went to overtime this game, the way it worked is it was college rules. You score, the other team gets a chance. They scored. We got the ball. They tipped the pass. I slid on my knees and caught it to tie the game. We got the extra, or neither team got the extra point. So it was fine. We switch back to defense. I'm guarding the guy they throw to. I tip the ball on a diving attempt, but I tip it straight up in the air. And he just falls back in the dude's hands. He catches it. So I'm like, fuck. All right, we got to score. I think that's when I ran to the end to like the pylon for the rushing touchdown. But the extra point, dude, this brings me tears to this day. We just needed the extra point to keep going. Our quarterback throws a very fine pass right across the middle of the field. It's like 5 yards right across the middle of the field. And two of our guys are there. Neither call for the ball. They both drop it.
Oof.
It hurt so, so bad. We fought so hard. I was like sliding all over the fucking field and we dropped it. It was so sad. All right, next up on the docket, we'll stick with somewhat Heat-relevant news. Dwayne Wade entered retirement. We know he's been on TNT doing some other things. He has now bought a stake in the Utah Jazz and will help make decisions in the front office for the team and do some other things. Some Heat fans actually gave him a little bit of backlash. I think it's awesome. I think it's cool that he's going into ownership, and there's no opportunity for him to go into ownership in Miami yet. So, just shut up. Any of those Heat fans who are giving him crap for leaving the Heat. He's not leaving the Heat. He's a lifetime Heat player. But I think this is really cool of Dwayne Wade. He's a really, really intelligent person. If you've ever heard interviews with him, he knows the game of basketball very well, obviously being a future Hall of Famer, multiple-time NBA champion. I like it. And already Utah clearly on the right step. So bringing in a presence and an attitude like Dwayne Wade can definitely only bring beneficial, you know, things to Utah's organization.
Yeah, big fan of NBA players like doing stuff after retirement. To be blunt and to be honest and to be quick about this.
All right, yeah, to be quick about it. Kobe's Nike deal has ended. Obviously, Kobe passed a little while ago now. His family has opted to end the deal. Everybody's on good terms. Nike still considers Kobe Bryant a very close and personal friend. You know, we don't really know the details about the reasoning for it, but it seems as that deal is over. So get your Kobe's while you can, I guess. Or I guess they're even really getting them sock up on them now because they're going to get even more valuable. All right. Last little bit of really sad news we were going to get to here is that Scottie Pippen's son, Antron, did unfortunately pass away at the age of 33. Our condolences, obviously, to the Pippen family, all their friends and any teammates that, not necessarily teammates, but any friends of Antron, of course. Very unfortunate to hear. Don't love reporting about it, but was relevant enough news that we thought everybody should know. Maybe send whatever prayers you can to Scotty's way. Very, very sad for them. The San Antonio Spurs, as it seems to be a recurring issue for them, have been fined for violating the NBA's resting rules. The rule they broke was that you are not supposed to rest multiple healthy players in the same game, nor on a road game. They did both. They benched DeMar DeRozan. They benched DeJounte Murray, and I think it was Rudy Gay. They routed the Suns regardless, but NBA not too happy here. I think Greg Popovich cares all too much.
Nope, not at all, honestly.
And I think that's his answer. Love that. All right. Go to a little more of a prediction side here. So we'll start in the East. That 4-5 matchup has been all over the place. Miami, Boston, Atlanta, Charlotte, Toronto, kind of. End of the day, you have to pick two teams. Who do you think is going to be playing in the 4-5 matchup for the Eastern Conference?
Okay. I think Charlotte is going to be one of them. You know what? I'm going to be a little zany because I'm feeling a little zany right now. I'm feeling Knicks Hornets 4-5.
I really hate that, but it's really not awful, especially
because it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And it'd be kind of the sad part is like one of those teams would have to advance to the second round. That's probably the worst part about it.
Oh, the Sixers would love that. The thing I'll say about the Hornets is that LaMelo Ball, apparently his wrist has now fully healed and he is going back to individual workouts. We still don't know if he's going to be able to return, but he and his camp and his family were hopeful that he will be able to return this year. So for his sake and the Hornets' sake, hopefully he can. For my prediction's sake, hopefully not. I really do think that Miami is going to be the 5 seed specifically. I think four is going to be one of two teams. I think it's either going to be the Knicks or the Celtics. I hate the idea of saying that it's going to be the Heat and the Celtics because they seem like the two teams that are the best and that it should be. But like Boston got hot. And at the end of the day, they have the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics have the best duo. And for the Celtics kind of trio of Kemba's playing well out of all of those teams, they have the most star power. And more importantly, the most experience. The Heat obviously haven't gone to the finals last year. The Celtics, two of the last 3 years prior to this season, had gone to the conference finals. They know what they're doing come playoff time. So long as both those teams are healthy, they're the teams I have. If one of the teams, specifically Boston, in my opinion, isn't healthy, then I see the Knicks because Thibodeau has the experience. Thibodeau knows what it takes to get a team to the playoffs, to get them, you know, to that seeding. And when it comes to the end of the year and the games you have to win, he got pretty good at that down in Chicago. So those are my three, but I would put most of my money on the Heat and the Celtics.
Probably fair enough. I think going off of that, the 4-5 in the West seems like it's going to, I think it's going to end up being the Lakers Nuggets. Mm-hmm. Is there a world where the Nuggets can win that? The answer is no.
Yes, and that's that we've been lied to about when Anthony Davis and LeBron James are coming back.
That's true, yeah. If AD has a crippling, like, Achilles injury and LeBron James happens to, like, retire from basketball tomorrow, then yes, I do think Nikola Jokic can lead his team past the bums that are the Lakers otherwise.
This isn't an or situation like Anthony Davis or LeBron James. This is both of them have to be out, and then the Nuggets stand a chance so long as Dennis Schroeder is shooting the 43% he's been shooting this year.
Yeah,
that'd be a zero fun first round series if I'm being completely honest. But hopefully,
I think the other thing, and this is in the West, I had a conversation with my friend about this the other day. Seven game series, assume both teams are fully healthy. Who wins the series? The Phoenix Suns or the Utah Jazz?
Is this fully healthy as in like it starts fully healthy, or they just like
everyone's off full? Injuries? Everyone's, yeah, turn off injuries in your 2K simulation here.
Cool. The Phoenix Suns are going to win in less than seven games. I think it's a very competitive series. I don't think there's a game that's necessarily decided by double digits, but I have so much respect for what Chris Paul has done to Phoenix. Mike Conley has had a very good year in Utah, and he's been important being the primary ball handler and playmaker for that team. But current Mike Conley to current Chris Paul isn't even a conversation. Chris Paul can both do what Mike Conley would do on offense, but better. And also stop Mike Conley from doing whatever he's going to do on the defensive side of things. Also, Donovan Mitchell, where he doesn't do all of the other things while Devin Booker doesn't do all the other things that Donovan Mitchell does, they both can score the basketball at an elite pace. And that's pretty much all they need out of Devin Booker at this point. And I think Gobert is better than DeAndre Ayton, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's too large of a difference in terms of impact of the game outside of Gobert's shot blocking ability. So, man, I like Utah. Don't get me wrong. I love the Spider-Man and Donovan Mitchell, but Chris Paul and Devin Booker might not be the best backcourt in basketball, but it is top three. And I don't really know if Utah has a way to stop it.
You know, my friend brought this up. I also said the Suns just because I know what Chris Paul can do. And also I think Devin Booker is ready for a playoff run. However, though, this is the counter argument. So I'm going to play this out of my friend here. Conley, Chris Paul. Yeah. Okay. I think Chris Paul wins that, but Conley's also still a very great point guard to have.
Oh, of course.
I think Mitchell and Booker cancel each other out.
Yeah. I think Mitchell has the chance to impact more outside of scoring, but yeah, I think they're going to more or less do the same stuff.
I think Gobert will shut down Ayton, but then again, like shut down is probably 12 points, and that's like what Gobert will produce. So like kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think Bogdan Bogdanovic is better than Jay Crowder in terms of like shooting.
Yeah, defensively, Crowder brings a little bit more, at least in the physicality sense, but Bogdanovic, no matter who's on him, is going to get his shots up.
I mean, Mikal Bridges versus Derek Favors. That's, I mean,
Favors kind of the other starter, is it? Isn't it Royce O'Neal?
Okay, Royce O'Neal. That's kind of a wash, though.
They're right? kind of the same players. Like, offensively, all they really do is shoot open shots, and they're really just there to guard teams forwards. But I think Bridges is better, if I'm being completely honest.
I think Bridges is a higher ceiling.
At least that, yeah.
But then the X factor, Robbie, we're fair with the X factor. Jordan Clarkson. And I know I'm making fun of this a little bit, but Jordan Clarkson can really do a lot. And that's the scenario where I do see Utah winning if they have Jordan Clarkson just absolutely going off with everyone canceling each other out. I agree. I think the Suns will win the 7-game series, but the bench depth for the Suns is a little bit worrisome in the sense that a lot of the pieces are very young without playoff experience. But given a few years, I think that team is filthy, other than Chris Paul is probably going to be 40 at that point.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is what will they do post-Chris Paul? Because that's when the team's going to be, like, the core is going to be really ready to go. You know, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Cam Johnson, all those young guys they have, that's when they're going to be ready. So we'll see if they either replace Chris Paul or if he can hold out a few more years. But, yeah, it's that would be a really fun series that I don't think we're going to end up getting in the playoffs, just because they are probably going to be 1 and 2, and the Lakers and Pop very probably the Clippers are going to beat one of them or both of them. So again, we'll see how it plays out, but that's our take here on the NBA so far. I think we got to everything we wanted to cover here, so we will move on down to the MLB, where we are going to start first and foremost with a very, very happy concept, and that is, for the first time since 1997, the New York Yankees are in sole possession of last place in the American League. We are very happy to bring you this joyous news here on Gym Class All-Stars, as just as much for Boston, we hate all New York sports teams. And good God, does it feel good to say that the Yankees suck, especially seeing that we predicted them to be the favorite to come out of the American League before the season started.
Don't sleep, though.
Of course not. Early season, of course, they're 5-10. But amid all this, the Red Sox, who we predicted to be one of the worst teams in baseball, are actually tied for the best record in the American League. And given all of that, 15 games in, Jay Bruce decides to call it a career. He has retired. He was in the Yankees outfield and designated hitter depth. He's done. What do the Yankees have to do?
Well, the Yankees' entire lineup is predicated on how much cash can I spend on people who will hit home runs. When those people don't hit home runs, yeah, they're doomed. I will say, though, Gerrit Cole has kind of had a rough start, all things considered, and Corey Kluber, I don't think, has been great either. If those pitchers can get themselves kind of whipped into shape, like, Gerrit Cole's an elite pitcher. Let's not forget that. That'll be good. I just really think it's going to come down to their offense. Like, they need Stanton, Judge, LeMahieu produces enough. They just sort of need them to be consistent. That's kind of the main crux of how they could be good. It's pretty simple. You just be consistent in baseball. A lot of times early season results, while they are good, like, long-term is kind of what everything evens out.
Baseball is a long season. And I'm hoping I'm jinxing this when I'm saying this, but I do not think the Yankees are going to be in last place the whole year. So for them, it's kind of just take a breath, stay healthy, relax, get your bats under you, you know, start hitting the ball with a little more consistency, like you said. And then the pitching, you know, that's a tough stadium to pitch in. It's pretty easy to hit home runs, especially with that short wall. But, you know, like you said, Gerrit Cole's a good pitcher. He alone should at least know what he's doing. Kluber, you know, hoping for that bounce back year. We'll see. But Yankees, at least in some amount of trouble. And as a general sports fan, I'm very happy about that. Moving on, Shane Bieber has become the first player in Major League history to record 10 or more strikeouts in the first 4 games to start a season. He has absolutely cooking for Cleveland. Is he the best pitcher in baseball to start this year right now?
That's a tough one to say. I'd say definitely the AL side. I mean, Rendon threw a no-hitter, but that's not his name. Carlos Rodon. I was right. That's good. I know my baseball, clearly. But that's what I'm saying, where Shane Bieber has been consistently dominant. Like, it's incredible how scary he is. Like, no batter can really go up against him. So I'm going to say yes for now. I think he's the AL Cy Young favorite, dare I say.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think long as Cleveland has any amount of real success, like he's going to be a and even if not, if he just keeps having the success, he's going to be a shoo-in to win that AL Cy Young award. You know, he's obviously going to have to compete with the names of like Kershaw and DeGrom for being the best pitcher in baseball overall. But thankfully, for award's sake, he's only going to worry about half the league. Mets are 7-4 right now. We talked about how that division in the NL is going to be very competitive. Obviously, off to a decent start, despite the long-term contract of Francisco Lindor not paying off immediately, as he's batting under 200 so far this year. Most people who follow baseball understand and expect that he's just going to, you know, get hot at a certain point. He'll turn it around a little bit, but especially just because they signed that big extension, right? Would you at least be, you know, in some capacity worried if you were a Mets fan right now?
No, because the Mets are doing pretty well, things considered. And like we talked about the Yankees, it's a long season. To me, there's like a little bit of worry in the sense that, okay, he's batting under 200, but I don't know, give him some time, give him some space. Simple. But like also as a Phillies fan, I'm totally okay with that. So
yeah, no, huge fan. If he wants to keep batting under 200 against us, at least, you know, that's fine. We'll accept. Speaking of our Phillies, Aaron Nola, 9-inning shutout against the Cardinals this past week. I believe only two hits allowed, a sensational performance. Phillies kind of an up and down start. A little on the better side. We're above 500, which is good, but definitely a good sign to see Nola pitching well out of the gates. That well specifically always feels good early season. Not quite a perfect game or no hitter, but you know, two hits, nothing to be ashamed of. Very solid performance. And are we going to start seeing more and more of these from the Phillies? Because, you know, it really does feel like we're starting to rear up towards actually being able to make a playoff run.
They're a lot more consistent of a team in terms of like batting and scoring. And then on top of that, they have actual pitching depth and bullpen relief, which is refreshing to say the least. So I think this year, I really do think they can make the wild card. I don't know what the playoffs are going to be like. I don't think it's going to be an 8-team thing, but I think give it 2 years and like they're going to be really, really good because they have a lot of young talent, but they're on the upswing. And it's great to see last year they kind of showed what they could do offensively and didn't have the pitching to back it up. This year they kind of have both. So we can actually get a chance to see talent being developed. On top of that, like pitching really starting to show up, and they can win. Like today, they lost to the Giants 2-0. Okay, that sucks. Obviously, they lost. But they only allowed a 2-run home run. That was it. So to me, okay, today they didn't score enough runs and they lost. But the fact they only gave up 2 runs and it was off a homer, okay, like that's progress to say the least. Instead of being up by 4 runs against the Orioles and blowing the lead. Like there's a lot of progress to be made, and that's kind of important to see.
Don't dredge up old memories. But yeah, it is nice to see a little change of pace for the Phillies bullpen, to say the least. That's what we got for baseball here. One more piece of news. We don't talk about soccer a whole lot here on the show, but something kind of hilarious is happening in the world of football. So we're going to hop across the pond, I guess, is the turn of phrase here, to the European soccer leagues. There are, I think, 12 teams so far have signed out of the Premier League to join what's going to be called the Super League to start in 2023-2024. It's not replacing the Premier League. It's essentially just like the next level up. So it's just kind of making it irrelevant. But I know you have some thoughts you wanted to bring to the table here. So I'm just going to let you take the reins after just explaining that this is a thing that is going to happen.
All right. So as a non-soccer fan, for the most part, I have done extensive research to understand why people have been upset by this. So I will break it down to you. Basically, soccer's got a bunch of different leagues, Premier League, and then it's got Spanish league. So it's got like Barcelona, Real Madrid, and then you have a few from the German league. So you got Bayern Munich, Dortmund, for example. A lot of these really great teams like Chelsea, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they are forming almost a conglomerate, which is the Super League. That sounds so stupid to say, and I absolutely hate saying it. But basically, the 12, I would call, premier clubs are coming together to form their own league. And the reason why people are mad, it seems like, is in Premier League, for example, all the clubs make the revenue. And then to some capacity, there's revenue splitting. So smaller clubs that are in the Premier League get like reasonable cuts, which is for the most part a good thing to keep those smaller clubs afloat and potentially gives them to be competitive in those leagues. The Super League, of course, is the pure embodiment of capitalism, where teams are like, screw that profit sharing. We deserve what our team makes. So they're creating their own league. It's going to be the best talent, at least currently, put together. And they're going to compete against each other, which Champions League is kind of like that, where the top four teams, a lot of the major leagues qualify and they face off against each other. This is kind of like that, except their teams are going to be consistent. Like in the Champions League, the top four teams from the Premier League make it, and that can change every year. In the Super League, it's going to be consistently those 12 teams. A lot of people are fighting back. UEFA is threatening to ban any players that play in the Super League from not letting them play in the World Cup or other leagues. I don't know, though, because I kind of like this. Soccer is a little bit pompous to a degree, and I kind of like this idea of taking the best of the best talent and shoving them into a league. Like, the Champions League is good because it changes from year to year. You don't know what to expect, and it's from clubs across the entire world. But I don't know. There's something about sticking it to organizations to a degree that's kind of nice. But I also understand if you're a soccer fan, it's tough because the Premier League's kind of become irrelevant. Like, if you're headlined by Arsenal, for example, like, Arsenal's a good team, but not a great team. Like, Chelsea's got Christian Pulisic, and it has a ton of these great players. Unfortunately, I'm a bit indifferent to it as a non-soccer fan. I think it'll ultimately hurt the sport of soccer, but then again, the Champions League was created to take the best of the best talent. This is kind of cutting out the middleman where people have to qualify. It's sort of just trying to make a great league. But I can see why it hurts the sport of soccer. End of my very ignorant soccer rant.
I like it. I'm with you for the most part. I'm interested to, you know, to hear and see what people in other countries where soccer is maybe a little more, especially European soccer, is a little more popular than in the United States, think about this, because obviously here it's not going over very well. And I assume it's not going over super well all over the place, but like, I'd be intrigued to hear what, you know, especially the countries in which these teams reside and really think about this. But either way, I think it's at least fun to change things up, and it's called the Super League. So, you know, it's obviously going to be super fun. So,
of course, it cannot be super fun.
Exactly. It's literally in the name. It's like Guarantee Rate Field. All right. So we're going to do a new segment here for our second segment of the show. We're kind of talking about if we wanted to do something different last few weeks. And so this time what we're going to do is we're going to talk about both our favorite and least favorite sports video games throughout our wonderful short so far lives. Obviously anything from our childhood, anything recent going to be talked about. We have some choice words for some interesting games. We'll start with the positive stuff. You know, everybody likes the good stuff. So Alex, what is your favorite sports game of all time?
Okay. My favorite sports game of all time is NFL 2K5. I have probably put easily 300 hours into the game, and it came out 2K5. It competed against Madden. And the big thing was in 2005, Madden was like $49.99. NFL 2K5 was $19.99, and it outsold Madden, which was like for the first time ever. This prompted Madden to sign an exclusive rights deal with the NFL, or like EA Sports in this case, to ultimately secure the rights. So NFL 2K5 ceased to exist, but that game was so fun, so simple. I played so much of it, 100% of the game. Absolutely loved, enjoyed playing it. I knew all the players from the Eagles because of that game. Like, I played with Eagles so much, and it was so fun, so simple. You could pick it up very easily. The one time you were over at my house, we played it. You hated it because you weren't good at it. You saw how good I was at it.
That's right, man. That was a while ago. But
it was.
Yeah, no. I assume that had I gotten some more practice and been able to be a more competitive game, I probably would have enjoyed it much more. But no, I respect that. That's a good one. And I'm glad you bring in a real throwback, because I'm also going to bring a throwback, maybe even a curveball. I assume everybody here assumes that my favorite game is some 2K game. It is not. My favorite sports game of all time is FIFA 06 World Cup Edition.
Really?
I had, as a kid, way too much fun playing that game. It's one of the earlier sports games where defense isn't really an option, so you just kind of score like 10 goals a game. And if you play as Spain, Fernando Torres is literally not stoppable. He's like LeBron James in every NBA live game ever. You run down the side of the field, you get to the 18, you turn in, you get to the penalty stripe, you kick it, you half power it, it's going in, it's over. They can't stop you. Raul, same way. They just had these two unstoppable players. I'd win the World Cup, you know, three times a year. It'd be great.
I think another honorable mention would have to be any of the backyard football games or backyard baseball. Yeah. I love the backyard football, and specifically, I know that's not the main one, but something about just that whimsical fun. Like, even if you're playing the CPU and want to shut them out, they could still score because, like, invincibility or all that. It was a good spin on it. Pablo Sanchez, elite athlete. I think, what's another, do we consider racing games?
Yeah, we'll call racing.
We have to go Mario Kart or any of the Mario sports. Like, a lot of those are tons of fun. I know it's a bit cheating.
Hey, we've had some bouts in Mario Baseball.
That's true. And Mario Kart especially. I'm pretty good at Mario Kart.
Oh, dude, Mario Kart can end friendships, and that's okay, because that shit is really where you put it all on the line. That is truly what racing is all about.
I think, if you remember, like, Justin, TJ, all them, they used to come to my house, and we used to play, like, battles with, like, the CPU. We used to have some fun times playing in my basement, and, oh, it's such good memories to think about now.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Oh, yeah. No, looking back, great times. We used to have Mario Kart tournaments at this house. It was good stuff. One game I will mention, A2K. My favorite 2K is 2K14. A lot of the early 2Ks are kind of the same game, to be completely honest, with very minimal differences, but that was the one that I always thought was the most complete, and the most, at least the passing system wasn't terrible. That was really the first time it didn't suck if you passed the basketball, so I'll shout that one out.
2K15 is the one with Durant, right?
Yeah.
That would be my favorite, personally, just because I thought it was pretty simple. Like, there were times where you get really frustrated, but I thought it was a pretty fair game in terms of, yeah. Other than layups. Layups are the only thing that would infuriate me. Yes.
The only reason why I picked 14 over 15 is because 15 was the first time they introduced the shot bar, and I hate the shot bar. I know you can turn it off, but I hate the shot bar. I think it's so stupid that you just have to look at a bar that rises or meets in the middle or something. Like, if you're going to play a basketball video game, learn when somebody's jump shot should release. It's pretty simple. Top of the jump. That's a good rant. You got me on the backyard ones. I leaned a little more towards baseball, but either way, like, the backyard sports were way too much fun. I think the first ever video game I ever owned was, or sports video game I ever owned was, it's like 2009 Kobe Bryant, or not 2009, like 1999 Kobe Bryant, like, Game Boy Advance 3-on-3 game. That always holds a special place in my heart, because I remember I would always look for, I never quite processed how basketball worked and how old players were when I first started getting into basketball. So I was playing this, like, 1999 game. I was looking at the players they had, and I was like, why can't I find Dwayne Wade? And so I would always play as Kobe Bryant and Alonzo Mourning, and I would literally never lose. So
2005 in general is a special year for sports games. MLB 2K5 is, like, almost a near perfect game, in my opinion. It was so much fun to play. I played a ton of that as well. NBA 2K5, while it is a fun game, it's definitely, going back to it now, and I did it a few weeks ago, it's pretty easy to make shots in that game. You can make some, like, you're, like, hovering in the air for, like, 5 seconds, and you throw up a layup with, like, Magic Johnson's always going to go in. But a lot of fun with those games, especially growing up with my brother playing them, at countless hours I put in. I think we have to give a little bit of love to Madden. I know it's kind of annoying. This is a really hot take. I liked Madden 12. I played a ton of Madden 12. I know it's not a good game, but I played a ton of
Peyton Hillis.
Peyton Hillis, yep, on the cover. It's not a good game, but I played a ton of it and was pretty good at it.
I like it because I think that was the last one they did before you couldn't really throw off your back foot anymore.
Oh, actually, Madden 08. Madden 08
was Vince Young.
That's the Vince Young one. And you had to play against these, like, you'd make fantasy teams and you had to play against these like top notch teams. The one was called like the Destroyers, and that was the last one. They would get five downs to like score, and every time they kicked a field goal, the post would widen, and for years it would shrink. So it was like that was the extra. Fuck. And you had to beat them. Jeez. I think the final one I want to highlight is NCAA Football 08.
Yep.
Because that showed me you could lateral, and that was the most groundbreaking thing in the world. I loved lateraling because no other game before that had it, and it was awesome.
100%. I'm gonna shout out NCAA 13 because of the mascot of game mode.
Oh, the mascot God, game mode. No, it was awesome. I love it.
Dude, you gotta play as Stanford. You're the trees. You're not actually holding the football. It's just kind of attached to your side. Yep.
You're the base of the group. Man.
But so where there is joy, there is also pain. So we said we're gonna talk about our favorites. Got to bring up the not so favorites. I'm going to let you go first because I have one game that I'm going to spend my entire time ranting about.
All right. So the two I probably talk about are 2K games, of course. Yeah. I liked 2K18, but I know people hated it because it's so easy to abuse, which is why I liked it, because I very much abused it. I did not like 2K19. I just didn't think it was fun in terms of like, I thought it was very, like a lot of other games, it was very easily abusable. And to me, that just isn't fun. It didn't feel realistic to me. I don't know, some snarky comments. In terms of some other games that I do not like, there was NBA Jam, and this, pause for a second, because it's not NBA Jam in general. The arcade version is awesome and one of the best of all time. But the NBA Jam on my dad's old Sega Genesis, unbelievably clunky. I don't know why. The port is awful for whatever reason. The arcade version is great, and the game itself is awesome. He's heating up. He's on fire. But God, the port of it was awful.
That makes a lot of sense.
So those are a few I would throw off the top of my head. A lot of my memories, though, are good sports games. I also hated Madden 05, but that was just because I didn't think it was a very good game, and I loved NFL 2K5 because
that's fair. I had one that I wanted to mention that wasn't my main one that I'm blanking on for a second. I feel like it was a basketball game. You know, if I think about it, I'll come to it. But any more that you had?
I think that's it for me. Honestly, I haven't played a whole lot of sports games in a while just because every year it seems like Madden's putting out the same game. I played a few of the 2K games because a lot of my friends did, but you know, I had my games. I enjoyed them. I played a ton of them. Even now, I'll still play NFL 2K5 every now and again.
All right, so I have one game I'm going to talk about here, and I'm going to explain to you that NBA 2K20 is the maybe not just worst sports game of all time. It really could be the worst video game of all time. And again, I have played the Avengers game multiple times. It's worse. I'll try and keep it simple and short, but basically, first off, it's a game based very much about animation. So like if you try and shoot a certain shot, like maybe like a runner or like a just a pull-up jump shot, there's only about three different ways the animation can actually look. And it's based off of three superstars, Giannis, Harden, and LeBron. If it's not something that, if the player you're using isn't one of those players, they're just going to try and do the same move like they were that player. And that makes zero basketball sense. Speaking of zero basketball sense, the people who made this game got cut from their, you know, JV eighth grade teams. Like, they don't understand how basketball works. There's moments where not even just animation, to just like the players make a dumb decision, like if you're like passing the basketball and just all of a sudden it's this like out of nowhere 3 feet above the receiver's head pass, it like it's awful. You can go back like without even trying, you're backing up and then you start moving forward and it still backs you up for another three paces. There's so many bugs to it. I mean, you can like, there's like a bumper for going out of bounds for like half a second before you actually go out of it. I mean, like I said, it's very clearly made by people who don't actually play basketball. And that was the most frustrating thing, because as a basketball player, there were certain things that I know I can do that I can't in that game, or I know I can't do and that you can in that game. Like you can literally travel in that game. If you drive at the basket and you hit circle, which is like the move button, you will make a move. It will then like lag you back into the spot you were at the start, do it again, but worse with the defender in the correct position, and you'll still probably green release it. So it's just a very, very poorly made game. I won't go too in depth into all the game modes, but like if you do an association, like after 1 year, every player is a 75 or better because of the G League and because of two-way contracts. And it's obnoxious. You have to edit the sliders so far down to make it even playable. Please, please, if you're going to buy a basketball video game, don't purchase 2K20. There are literally any other basketball game ever, including NBA Live, is better than 2K20. End of rant.
Well, there you have it, folks. Those are some of our best and worst sports video games of all time. Let us know what you think are some of your favorites or some of your least favorites. I know there's a lot of older games we didn't talk about. We didn't really talk about the NHL games. NHL 95, by the way, elite game. Let me tell you.
NHL makes some pretty solid games, to be honest. Like, I haven't played any of the new ones, but like I played like 13, 14. They're pretty fun. Like, honestly, I enjoy it more than I enjoy watching hockey. So,
yeah. So let us know what we missed. There's definitely some. But, yeah, you want to do an abridged version of superlatives today?
Yeah, so we're pretty much just going to do one superlative at this point. Can't try and keep the show a little shorter. We're going to do the moment of the week, as that's one of the more fun awards here. So I'm going to start because I want to end on yours. So mine is, as I described before, it's Bam Adebayo's buzzer beater over Brooklyn, in hopes that it really does spark a run by Miami. Just to describe the play, again, no Jimmy Butler in this one. Bam caught the ball at about the three-point line extended with about 11 seconds left, passed it back out. They gave it back to Bam at the same spot. And then Goran was kind of calling for the ball at the top of the key, and Bam just kind of waves him off. He's got Jeff Green on him, takes a couple power dribbles to the left, stops, faces the basket, nice little push jumper, rattles off both sides of the rim and in. Very, very nice shot. Dwayne Wade tweets, "I really dead ass thought he was going to jump up onto the scoreboard," as Dwayne Wade used to do in his prime after a buzzer beater in Miami. As a Heat fan, awesome shot. As an NBA fan, great to see Brooklyn lose. That was my moment of the week.
All right. So before I go into my moment of the week, first and foremost, Steph Curry dropped 49 today against my Sixers. Literally is a human cheat code. And if we do a Return of the King, he is my Return of the King.
He was my MVP, so I'm with you.
Yeah, utterly incredible. He's playing like his unanimous MVP here. So my best moment is an MLB play. And I have to bring this up because I watched the video so many times and it just made me laugh. So Cubs, Braves, I think it was yesterday. Freddie Freeman was running to third and got caught in a pickle play. So Anthony Rizzo got the ball way before Freddie Freeman was going to make it to third. So Freddie Freeman decided to do the smart thing and turn back to second. When Anthony Rizzo caught the ball, though, and by the way, he was mic'd up for this. Apparently they're good friends. And he yelled, "Frederick!" and charged at him. And Freddie Freeman just started laughing as, you know, eventually got put out. If you haven't seen the video, please watch it. But it's one of those funny kind of like softball beer league moments where it's just kind of like two friends running at each other. And it was just so funny. It's one of those lighthearted kind of enjoyable moments where it's like they're competitors, obviously, but it was like, "Frederick, get over here," and just charges at him. And just like the terror, but yet the sheer laughter you're having. I thought that was a pretty wholesome moment. And honestly, it made me realize that we forget that there's a lot of fun, good MLB moments like that, especially with Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, no, those are two like class act guys, like two of the best, genuinely best people you're going to see in sports, Freddie Freeman and Anthony Rizzo. So we love moments like that. We definitely had some moments like that in our playing days. So we love to see that. So awesome moment there. That is going to bring our show to a close for this week. The special Monday episode, again, we just needed a day. Thank you guys for holding out with us. We appreciate you as we're working through our everyday stuff, but we'll be back next week at our normal time and day. So be ready for that one. Talk more about what will have been the NFL draft, as we'll be recording afterwards. You know, continue stories of the MLB and the NBA and any other super leagues that pop up, we'll definitely be telling you about. So until then, hope you guys have a fantastic week and enjoyed the show, I guess, at this point, if you're listening at the end here.
Take care, everyone.